You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM at the University of British Columbia Point Grey Campus in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Located on the traditional ancestral unceded territory of the Musqueam people. Welcome to the Lisa Lafferty Podcast, an exploration into the world of theater through a series of conversations with a talented and eclectic group of accomplished playwrights and theater artists from New York, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, London, England, and Saskatoon. Episode 2. Allison Kelly of Vancouver is an actor, street performer, teacher, and writer with two shows on at the Arts Club Theater this season. Lisa Lafferty and Allison Kelly.
Allison Kelly, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you. This is very exciting.
It's very exciting. Now, first of all, my podcast is about Canadian theater and theater around the world, as well as women in theater and playwrights. So that's the general idea. But let's just talk a little bit about you first. Mom's the Word, something that's just gone around the world that you're very, very famous for. You got a play coming up at the Arts Club. You graduate of Studio 58, teacher, lecturer. I didn't know about the street theater, so I can hardly wait to talk about that.
Okay.
I'd like to start at the beginning, but I can't because I can't wait to talk about your play that's in rehearsal right now at the Arts Club, The Day Before Christmas, co-written with Stacey Kazer. Tell me a little bit about where you are in the process with that play.
We started rehearsal last Saturday. It's very exciting. It's very often in the past when I've written, it's written with myself in mind. And this time I very intentionally said, no, I don't want to be part of it as an actor. I want to simply be the writer. And yeah, so that's where we're at.
And so Stacey's been your writing partner for a couple projects now.
Yep.
And she's a graduate of the Masters of Fine Arts playwriting program here at UBC.
She is. And she comes from a background of film and television. And I come from a background of theater, so it's a nice blend of things.
And what was your previous project writing with her?
We wrote a show called Conversations with My Mother, which opened at had its premiere at the Gateway Theater in Richmond 2 years ago. This
awesome.
Time 2 years ago.
It's good stuff. We can see that play. Okay, let's not leave The Day Before Christmas yet.
Okay.
I want to talk more about that because what a great coup to have a show on at the Arts Club, and what a great idea to have a Christmas show. Who came up with the idea? Where did it all start?
Well, Stace and I were talking one day and I said, you know, we need to write a Christmas show. There's lots. Well, there aren't a whole ton of them out there. There's the classics, but there really isn't a whole lot of Christmas shows that are of right now, here and now. And I said to Stace, we need to write a Christmas show. And she said, I hate Christmas. I said, so do I. So it's perfect. And then we started looking at why we hate Christmas and how so many women get, especially if you're a mom, which I am, you get hung up on these expectations of trying to repeat all the great things that happened around your Christmases when you were a child and then introducing new traditions. And for myself, and I know I can speak for Stace because this was it for her, was that you take it on as you're the only person who can make this perfect for your family, and it never works out, and the kids resent you and you resent them. And so we wanted to show that modern dilemma of what that is. To be parents at Christmas time in the here and now.
So it's been a pretty short process, though, in terms of writing a play. When did you start to write this play?
This has been a whirlwind. We started writing it about a year and 8 months ago.
And then 8 months later, you find yourself in the...
React. React is a fantastic program by the Arts Club where they look at plays in development and they give you a reading and a director and actors to try out your material. And we did that a year ago and they came back and said they were interested in developing it further and that we would be the following Christmas, 17-18 season.
And what did I say to that?
You said, oh, they're silly. They should have done it right now. And then they came back and said, could we do it this year?
So you're in rehearsal now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that exciting?
It's very exciting.
And you just told me you did some rewrites today.
I did.
What
That's
was that
why
about?
I was late. Well, new plays. You do the best you can with the writing. And we've had two readings since React, where we have professional actors working with our director. But still, you get into rehearsal and suddenly those wonderful actors, God, I love actors, they start going, you know, this doesn't really make sense with the journey of my character. I don't understand why suddenly this is happening when we haven't seen this, or logistically, I don't understand what's happening here. And so as a writer, you really have to be on your toes and not get defensive and trust that what the holes that they're finding are real and have to be acknowledged, and then you sit down and write. And unfortunately, Stacey is away, so I'm going and writing and hoping she'll like what I'm writing.
And you mentioned your actors. You have a fabulous cast. Tell me a little bit about them.
Oh, we have a fantastic cast. We have Jennifer Clement. I've pulled her out of 2 years of retirement because she runs the acting program at the film school in town. So we've got her as our lead, the mom. And I should say that this play is centered around a middle-aged woman, which is not a demographic we see on stage much.
Woo-hoo.
So that's very exciting. And we've got Andrew Wheeler as our father. And he's fantastic, two veterans. And then we have two young actors, both just out of theater school within the last couple of years, playing the kids. And another young guy playing a small part at the end.
A small part at the end.
Yeah, he gets to come on right at the end
and kind of
shake things up. No, he may be dressed as Santa Claus, but that's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Tell me a fun story about The Day Before Christmas.
During the REACT reading, when we were about to read for that, Bill Millard sat down beside me in the audience and then looked at me and went, "Oh, are you going to sit there?" And I said, "I am." And he said, "Oh," and moved. I think it was, he didn't say it the most kind way, but it's more, I know writers get anxious because he's got so much say.
He was actually taking care of you.
Yes,
that's
he was.
What you're saying.
Yes.
So speaking of your year at the Arts Club, you also have Moms the Word 3.
Yay, we do.
Nest Half Empty. Now, I feel like maybe we should start a little bit earlier on with Moms the Word.
Yes.
20 years ago?
25.
25 years ago. Tell me the story.
There was a group of us mums. Some of us knew each other well. Some were introduced to the others as the project started. We were all at that age that we were starting to get pregnant, have babies, and we were watching our careers kind of melt away. Because I know I got called in one day for an audition, and then half an hour later, the phone rang, and it was the director saying, "We've just heard you're pregnant." I said, "Yeah," and they said, "We can't have the character pregnant. She needs to announce a pregnancy at the end of the script." And so most of us found the world of going into parenthood was so exhausting and so all-consuming, we couldn't imagine going and doing what you need to do to show together. So we got together thinking we were going to write a variety-type show that would be on at a festival called Women in View. It doesn't exist anymore, but it ran for several years, supporting and showcasing women in their work in the theater. And we wrote this piece. Well, we kept trying to write this piece. And we'd get together every Saturday, this group of women, and we'd cry and we'd laugh and we'd commiserate and we'd reveal secrets. And we never got any writing done. And then as this deadline got closer, the show was coming up, we all said, we've got to write something, we've got to put something down. And then we kept trying to find a vehicle to hang it on. You know, we're meeting at a coffee shop, or we're at a quilting bee, or one, you know, these stereotype things. And it didn't feel right. And finally, the deadline's looming, and we just said to each other, "You tell that story, that made me laugh, or that one, you've got to tell those ones, that's an arc there, that one made me cry, make sure you get that one in." And we went on stage, we had an hour-long show, we were terrified, because we felt we were just talking heads, and who is going to want to listen to these stories about what it is to become a parent? And the truth was, a whole lot of people.
People all around the world.
It does. Well, then we went away and wrote it into a full-length piece over the next year. And then we went back to the Arts Club, and then things went crazy. Yeah, beyond our wildest dreams.
Well, beyond everybody's wildest dreams.
Holy
so
Dinah.
So you had a great run at the Arts Club.
Yes.
And then tours, no doubts. And then... Yeah. That's the play you went around the world.
That is the play that went around the world.
And so tell me that story about you going with it around the world. Where did you get to perform?
Well, the first outside of Canada place it went was to Australia through one of those magic strings of events. A man who's a film producer, film and television producer, was sent our cassette tape. That tells you how long ago it was. The CBC recorded us, and he was sent this tape by his brother who had seen us in Victoria. And he said he had to pull over. He was laughing so hard. And he had just become a father, so much resonated. And on that, he tracked us down across the world and said, "Here's what I want to do. I want to launch this in Australia." our agents, being what they are, our brilliant marquee agency, said, great, but you need the ladies to make this work. You need to find out what their magic is. So you and our producer in Australia flew here, met us all, went back to Australia, cast types of women he felt represented us, and then brought us all down there to go into rehearsal with this other cast. And we launched it at the Comedy Fest. And after 10 days, they took it over, finished the Comedy Fest, and ran it for 8 years.
Wow.
I know.
Theater's magical, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
I love what a smile. It reminds me, like, the big smile it brings to your face. You think of, like, a band having to play the same song over and over again.
Yeah.
But really, that's just been a giant gift.
Oh, unbelievable. Thing. It's been unbelievable.
And
yeah.
How about Europe? Did you get to go to England or?
Yeah. Then we had in our contract, this is why our agents are so magic, that we needed to go to all the openings. And originally that we had to have one of us in rehearsal.
Wow.
So when it went to Scotland, when it went to Ireland, when it was in England, Germany, one of us or just all of us went to openings. Norway.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So now Mom's the Word, for anybody who somehow is under a rock and doesn't know, is very, very personal stories.
Yes.
About the birthing of your children,
yep.
The pregnancies,
yep.
The nursing,
yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. And we have, speaking of nursing, it's a world first. We have, in the beginning, when we were all still nursing babies, we had a live breast milk fight on stage.
I know. I
that even nurses didn't believe it was true. We went, oh, no, it's true. It's the real McCoy.
Yeah. They pulled out their boobs and sprayed
milk
at each other. It's such a pure way of doing it. You know, it sounds like porn, but it wasn't. It was G-rated.
No. We were told by people in the Lelesh League, and for people who don't know what that is, it's an organization that really supports and promotes and helps women and encourages women to breastfeed. And they said we did more for the cause of encouraging people to breastfeed in that show than anything they could have ever done. Yeah.
So what I think is cool too is you've taken that personal stories and the people that do the play. For some reason in my mind, I just thought they would bring their personal stories to it. But no,
nope.
It's a script and they perform your stories.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some arguments around that. The certain members of the cast felt that it would be a great thing to substitute pieces in. But the majority of us really wanted the play to live as it was. So it's our stories that got told.
It does make sense because it was so successful as
it
was. And so in the summertime, they remounted the original Mom's the Word.
They did.
And Cooley, of course, new members, and they're all new moms.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. It was, and they have just gone to, they're just in Winnipeg now in rehearsal. It was a co-pro between the Belfry and PTE. And so they're in Winnipeg right now about to open.
Well, 25 years. People need to see it again, right?
Everybody's growing
up. So then there was Moms 2.
Yes.
Is that Unhinged?
That's Unhinged.
Unhinged.
Yes.
And then there was a mixy one.
There was Moms the Word Remixed, which was the best of, with a few new pieces to hinge them together. So you got half of Moms 1, and then you saw those kids go into teenage years and beyond. The new one is Moms the Word 3, Nest Half Empty.
Right. And now we've gone back to the original.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So how's the writing going?
It's going well. We've had a couple of fantastic workshops where our director, who doesn't live here, he splits his time between Australia and London, England. He's flown in and worked with us. And, it's such a funny process, and especially when you're working with five women, like us all contributing our voices. And I just love watching our evolution. We always go through the phase where it's shit. We have nothing left to write about. We go through the phase where everybody gets very protective and pissy about their writing and not being represented enough. And then we just hit, after our last workshop, we have gotten back together, and now we're going through the comb through, and suddenly we just gel and we're on the same page, and everybody's going, yep, I can go. Yep, totally. Yep, do this. So we're about 2/3 of the way through grooming the script.
And it goes on in April.
It goes on in April.
So you rehearse in March sometime.
We go in March, yep.
Beautiful. And that's at the Granville Island stage.
Yep.
And the day before Christmas is at the new BMO space. What's your experience been with, have you gotten in there yet?
I saw Onegin there last year.
Right.
And I love the space. And I was very nervous because the show we've written we really envisioned a proscenium arch,
right?
Fourth wall. Even though the main character breaks fourth wall, but they wanted us in this black box BMO space, which is a beautiful space. I simply couldn't imagine the play in there.
Right. Because it's not a proscenium.
It's not a proscenium. No, it's thrust, actually. Yeah. They're going to do three sides. And I was the one going, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. How can you have the surprises? There's a bunch of surprises.
Right.
And it's why I'm not a designer, because I cannot see space. And they kept going, we can make this work. And I said, can you keep those surprises a surprise? And they said, we can. And what they're doing is fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a lot about your shows and what's coming up. Now we're doing it in the reverse order. Let's talk a little bit more about Allison Kelly.
Oh.
The sweet, beautiful, multi-talented, a brilliant actor, a fantastic writer. And you just mentioned your collaboration efforts. Man, you are a good note taker and giver.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
We know that because we are in the same writing group.
Right. Yeah. We haven't had anybody from Wet Ink yet on the podcast.
Oh.
So why don't you talk a little bit about Wet Ink
and
what it is.
Wet Ink is a fantastic group that put together by Susan McFarlane, Loretta Cito, and Lina
Goldharsmith.
And they wanted to create a writing collective that would support and encourage, again, female writers, because we are not only underrepresented on our stages, we are underrepresented as writers and as produced writers. And so they came together, and it's kind of snowballed. It went from three of them. They hired a professional person to, facilitate the group. And they're really militant. You know when the meeting is, and you've got X number of minutes each session, and you read each session, and other people read your work so you can listen to it. And it's really gotten a fantastic name. A lot of the shows coming out of there that are being written there are being produced. And the word is spreading that it's a really valuable, valuable service that's being done.
Oh, it's a great thing. So not just you mentioned female writers, but also female protagonists.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Leading the show on the stage.
I would say almost everybody has their central character is a female, wouldn't you?
Yes, there's just lots. So basically a group of 10 to 12 women over 10 weeks get together once a week and we take turns. And the beautiful part about it is women transitioning. So people like me, who was a director, you are more focused as actor, teacher, and get us all writing.
Yeah.
So, which is totally cool. And the facilitator, Jane Heyman, keeping that clock, making
sure
everything goes on time.
And so many of the women, because they come from a theater background, when you get your work read, you're getting a really good reading. You're not getting people monotone and not they understand what it is to look at a script and bring it to life. So you really get to hear your work.
Really, really do. So that is such a great part of it. And you were great at that. Definitely cold reading. Like actors can pick up a page and make it sound like their own words. And
I love doing that.
So good. You're very good at it. Yes. And I had Wendy Knoll reading a character for a long time. And
actors.
Not necessarily cold reading.
No.
But she's such a good actor. Okay. I literally didn't know that that's what my words were saying.
I know.
Like I'd say to her, you're too. She goes, it's the words. I said, no.
No.
I really don't think it is.
No.
I think it was you.
I know.
But thank you.
I had that conversation with Jennifer in rehearsal the other day. I said, you brought tears to my eyes. I didn't know that that moment was about what you're doing right now,
right,
where this character who's really bossy and in control suddenly opens up her heart and says to her husband, I need your help. I don't know what to do here. And I didn't realize that that's what we had written.
Right.
And Jen kept saying, what you just said, oh, it's what you've written. Yeah, no, we didn't write it with that in mind.
You brought it. So you're working on yet another piece.
Yes.
You
mean
that?
The one in Wet Ink?
Yeah.
Yes. I'm writing a show that I'm very, very excited about. It's all about dying. It's about losing a long-term partner, and it's a comedy. I'm very excited about that one.
How's the progress?
Great. Great. I think I'm about three scenes away from finishing.
Right,
we've never done this before. We're on a hiatus in midway in Wet Ink. So I've got three scenes to write before we get back together.
Cool.
Yeah. It's always that ending. Do you find that? It's the ending. No, you are a plotster, so no, you don't.
You know what? I've come to university, and they really encourage what I encourage. Oddly enough,
plotting.
I've come to the right place.
Good.
Well, I really like the screen course, because they do what I want us to do in theater. You have to write out your log line and your pitch and your outline, and then you start writing your piece.
And Stacey does that, right? Stacey makes me do that. So it's been really interesting.
And then I go to my stage writing course, and even I wrote a piece that didn't have a protagonist. Every day I say to somebody, well, who's your protagonist? Who's your protagonist? And then at the end of that class, I was like, somebody needed to ask me who my protagonist was. And then as soon as I picked it, all the problems in the play got
solved.
And my husband read it, and he said, wow, this is an odd. Everything's so tight. It really smooth. You know, I said, well, I picked a protagonist. He goes, I can't tell. Like, I don't know what you mean. So it wasn't something that came blazing off the page. It was something that is just important in the craft.
Yeah.
Really, very, very helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so a little farther back in the life, if we had a way back machine. Because you grew up hereabouts, Vancouver-ish.
I did.
Where?
I grew up in Lower Point Grey when it was still a working class hood and not the wealthy hood.
And where did you start in theater? You wandered into a...
I come from a large family, five kids. And each year, we all had to take swimming, and it wasn't a had to in a resented, but they felt that was a life skill. So we all took swimming at the old Crystal Pool. For those of you who are Vancouver people, you will remember that lovely pink stucco building down in English Bay with the balconies. And you took swimming, and you were allowed to take one other sport or class. And I wanted to take a cooking class at the Dunbar Community Center. And these are in the days you had to walk up there and register in person. And my mom came home and said, cooking was full, but there's something called drama that I think you would like. And I said, well, what's that? I was 10. What's drama? And she explained it to me. And I said, sure, I'll try that. Do you know who my first teacher was? Ms. Jane Heyman.
Jane Heyman, right.
So I met Jane when I was 10, and it was her very first class that she had ever taught. But I got bitten by the bug. So I've been in theater since then. I took a few years out when I panic around things just after high school and stuff, but always came back.
And now you're a regular instructor at Studio 58?
I'm their relief teacher there. So sometimes I'm there a lot, sometimes I'm there a little, but I've been their relief teacher for the past 28 years.
I knew this would happen to us. Time has just zipped by. So I kind of get.
Is it half an hour?
No, I got some important questions I got to ask.
Okay, wow.
I just want to ask about your perception, because you have had a play or two that have gone around the world. What is your perception of Canadian theater around the world?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if I have a perception around Canadian theater. So much of our success feels, I know, I don't mean false modesty. We wrote a really interesting piece about something that had never really been talked about. This is 25 years ago. It wasn't hip in Hollywood to have babies yet, the way it is now. Angelina hadn't adopted all those children. And nobody talked about motherhood beyond the cartoons, Family Circus, and what was the other one, For Better or Worse, where everything was always had that sweet tinge added to it. And what we did was say, anybody else feel they've made a mistake? I think I may hate my kids. We talked about not wanting to have sex with our partners after we had babies. Like, just don't touch me. No, I don't need to be touched ever again by anybody. So we were writing honestly. And Canadians are known for our humor. And Mums has incredible humor in it. So I don't know that I'm the person to ask about Canadian success.
Right.
I know, here's a bragging point. We are one of the most successful exports ever out of Canada.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So with our work through Wet Ink and just your own work through your life, I guess there is, like you say, lots of progress for women in theater these days.
It's finally, after years of being talked about it, and it seems that's the way it has to go with any issues. We talk about it for years, and then suddenly there is a turning point. And I really feel we're seeing it with ethnic diversity on our stages, and we're seeing it with women being represented. Because if you look at the audiences, it's all middle-aged women buying the tickets.
Exactly. At Studio 58, is there a balance between the male and female students, or are there still more girls?
No. We try to keep the classes. We take two classes of 16 kids in the fall, and then one again in January, so two a year. And we try as best we can to keep them balanced.
So what do you think is the most important thing that you teach those folks?
Self-sufficiency. So they, when they come out of there, you say if you've gone through the, there's an acting stream and there's a production stream. Everybody takes first term acting because we want the production kids to know what it is to be an actor. And then once the shows start going up, the students are all involved in building the sets, running the lights, setting the lights, doing props, building props, maintaining props, doing the laundry. And then you do work on a solo show while you're there. And you have to, your graduation project is a solo show that you've worked on for 3 years. So our kids come out with, our students come out with, they've had experience writing for stage, writing for themselves, but they've also done all the background stuff so they have respect. And so we get wonderful feedback, even if it's things like your students hang their costumes up instead of dropping them on the floor. Or when it comes to doing a fringe show, which most people start out doing fringe shows and small festivals, you know what it is to create your own show and all the work that you need to do.
I had that as well at my university, the University of Guelph. We had to do costumes and sets and everything. And I just used those skills for years.
Yeah.
Including right now, for example.
Yeah.
Like we had to, I saw in the other studio, they've just transferred all of their old tapes onto digital.
Yeah.
So they had the old machine and I walked in and I go,
I know how to use that, right?
I could splice together some tape right now.
If that tape broke, I could get it up and going. Exactly.
I can fix that for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's excellent for the Studio 58 students.
Yeah.
See, what other fun questions? I do have a couple of just podcasting questions. Have you ever seen a bear?
Yes. A bear?
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to hike all the time in our local mountains.
So you're a Deep Cove girl.
One time, here's another brag, the House on Grass Trail, I built a kilometer of that puppy as a summer job one year.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, it was when I was at UBC the summer in between 2 years that I was here. And I was the foreman of my crew. And with the main guy, we were out flagging the trail one day. It was foggy and rainy. And we could hear trumping along the bush beside us just a few bit. We kept going, shh. And then it would stop, and then we'd move, and it would move. We were being followed by a bear. Yeah.
When was the last time you swam in a lake or the ocean?
This summer.
Yeah, which one?
I swam at Cultus, and I swam down at Third Beach.
Cold, yeah. But nice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, the money question, the big money question. How does one make money at theater?
Oh.
Or make a living. How did you make a living?
I have been really lucky because since leaving theater school, I have made my living in this industry. I think for me, the key has been being diverse. So I write, I teach, I act, and I used to do a lot of street theater. And street theater pays a hell of a lot better, actually, than stage work. And it doesn't pay as well as film and television. And but it's much more challenging and fun than, say, doing something like waiting tables.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Street theater. I never knew that about you. I mm-hmm. saw that. What do you teach?
When I teach it, well, when I performed it, you can break street theater into two types. The people who gather and do a circle show, you know, the people who have acrobatics and juggling skills and they have a show that has a beginning and end. And then the other group, which is you develop comedy characters and you do what's called roving. So you get hired to do lineups up at Whistler, at festivals, at conventions. But you tend to be moving on. You might stop and have an interaction with somebody for a short interaction and then you move on.
Right.
So that's the idea of a rover. So I did these bigger than life comedy characters. My favorite was Fifi Le Fluff. And she was a hairdresser. I thought everybody's hair was very stupid and people would let me cut their hair. They let me cut. I'm not a trained hairdresser and I have cut many people's hair. The streets of Whistler Village.
That is very good. Okay, just before we wrap up here, is there anything else that I should have asked you?
Anything else? I don't think we've covered everything. The teaching, the...
Oh, that's pretty good.
We've done the teaching, the acting, everything.
Pitch that the day before Christmas because that's the one coming up.
Excellent.
I saw a reading of it. I thought it was awesome. I could hardly wait. It was that I knew they needed to pick it up. I knew that they were going to need it more than that.
You said that instantly.
Because it was so good. It's just good.
Thanks.
So, you're welcome.
Thanks. On stage from the 24th of November.
There you go. 24th of November to the 24th of December.
Exactly. And I'm not just saying this. Apparently shows are already selling out. People want a Christmas show.
Yeah,
so
people want to
book
go to
early.
The Christmas
don't do the walk up, which we're so famous for in this city. Yeah, book
so
your
that's
theater.
Artsclub.com.
Tickets, yep.
And it's at the BMO stage.
Yep.
Allison, thank you so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Nice to see you, Liesl.
Thank you for listening to the Liesl Lafferty Podcast. This was episode 2. To download other conversations in this series with Brad Fraser, David J. Diamond, Laurel Thompson, Simon David, and Yvette Nolan, go to citr.ca.